Check one, check two. It's Data Transfer Season 2, Episode 23. I'm Audrey.
I'm Carla.
I'm going to waste nobody's time. I'm wasting no time this evening because we are going to introduce our guest this week, a thinker from the internet, somebody who has very incisive takes, somebody who is in the business of pop culture of a dying empire.
That is what I'm known for, yes, I suppose, at this point, yeah.
It's Josh Borman from The Worst of All Possible Worlds.
Howdy. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm excited. I just watched 22 minutes of largely inscrutable cartoon content. And I'm excited to talk about what I've seen because I have very little understanding or frame of reference for it. So I will be leaning on both of you heavily to guide me on this journey.
It's all vibes. It's just all vibes.
Yeah.
How's everybody doing out there? Anybody do anything fun today?
Well, yesterday.
Nobody did.
Yeah, okay. I did not. I mean, today I went and I got two slices of pizza. Which is par for the course for me. But yesterday I did do a stream that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, the Family Feud stream.
Yeah, and I also recorded for a different podcast, a podcast known as Radio Free Tote Bag. That's I think that was yesterday, right?
That was not yesterday, no.
Okay, well, maybe it was the day before or something. The whole week is blurring together is what you need to know. No, I recorded with Trash Future yesterday. It's been another busy week for your boy. I think this is my third or fourth guest appearance of the week.
Jesus, God. Workhorse out here.
I do what I can.
Corla, did you get up to anything noteworthy?
I mean,
the hell is that noise?
What's the
name? Yeah, we're recording at the moment. Sorry.
She's opening a bag full of louder bags.
That's like, is that a Sunchips bag or some shit? What's going on?
Sunchips circa 2009 bag.
I didn't realize it was gonna be so loud.
It's okay.
Fuck. Yeah. My partner and I have been playing Pokemon Brilliant Diamond.
Nice.
Ooh. Just dunked a bunch of hours in that over the last 2 days. I've been just watching over her shoulder while she enjoys the nostalgia and helping her name her Pokemon just the foulest things that can get through the censorship.
Hell yeah. And it sounds like as you've been doing that, you've also been enjoying Sunchips. A lot of them.
I wish I'd been. No, it's just been her taunting me with them.
Garden salsa or harvest cheddar?
Hmm.
I don't know.
Debate.
Ask her.
Hey, Lilith.
Hey, Lilith. What flavor are those chips? Oh, those are nuts.
These are Chex Mix.
That's Chex Mix.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
Got that garlic powder all over it.
Oh, shit.
So for my money, the best kind of treat you can make with Chex is Muddy Buddies or
Muddy
Puppy
Buddies
Chow, as is often called. Yeah.
And I'm talking not the one you get in the bag at the convenience store.
No, you got to make it. You got to make it yourself.
Yeah.
With the powdered sugar, with the chocolate. Yeah.
And you just nyut.
Ugh.
In the Chex Mix?
You got a nut in
you
the
got
Chex
a nut
Mix.
In it.
I encountered many moons ago as a younger person an article about how to cook with semen.
Ew.
Oh, okay.
Why?
It's very salty, you see.
I don't
right?
know.
So you
no.
can use the salinity
salty
of the cement.
Protein filled potentially an emulsifier.
Yes.
You know what else is salty? Salt.
Salt.
Maybe
salt.
Just use that. Asshole. It's not you. Whoever wrote the cookbook is some sort of a deviated prevert.
I did,
but
of course,
we celebrate
make eggs.
That. On this show.
I did, of course, make eggs as a younger person, but
then you had them all scooped out.
So you can jack off in these eggs.
I'm gonna just jerk up.
It was hard to cook up a batch in the kitchen, I gotta say. It was not the easiest thing in the world. But I pulled it off.
But you want how many cups? Oh, God, I'm gonna be here for like a day.
I did get to do something a little fun at work today. I got to do something of a creative project. I
jacked off into some eggs.
I jacked off into some eggs.
Let's go.
And then I made a designer lookbook. I work as the design coordinator for a furniture sales department. And so I got a little picture from everybody and I had them write a bio and I took some of their designs and I put them on a little thing. I even put a little filigree at the bottom of each page.
It's like a yearbook for furniture.
Exactly. So that if somebody comes up and says, I want an appointment, I get to go, whoosh, who with?
Nice.
Pretty fun. It was a pretty fun little project. I still have one designer who has not gotten back to me and has had fully a week to submit all of the shit that they needed to submit. But
maybe they don't want to be there. In the book.
You snooze, you lose.
That's right. That's right. You're going to miss out. You're going to miss out. But yeah, other than that, not a whole lot going down. Do you want to get into some plot recounting? Do you want to get into some plot synopsis?
Yeah, if you can help me out with expressing what it was that we just saw, I would be forever in your debt.
Yeah, let's catch up just a tiny bit.
Yeah, let's do season two. Let's see what happened in season two.
Yeah, previous episode, we had everyone trying to repair the damage from the rest of the show so far.
Yeah, they were doing, what's the name of that project that we did in Europe following World War II?
The Marshall Plan?
Marshall Plan. I was thinking of Operation Paperclip, which is a different thing.
More than a little different, yes.
Very different from the Marshall Mathers Plan.
They're doing the Marshall Mathers Plan.
Or the Marshall Mathers EP, for that matter.
That's right. That's right. A Tortamon pissed on the beach and stood in it and then attacked Daisuke. And Daisuke said, will you please wash your hands before you kill me? That happened in the last episode.
And leading up to all of that, we've had a half a season of everyone else being good guys. And this one kid, the protagonist of this episode, just being Hitler, just being Digi-Hitler. Yeah. Just whipping and killing people. And
so I noticed that in this episode, they refer to him as the Digimon Kaiser.
Yes.
Which is presumably because they couldn't call him the Digimon Hitler, right?
Right.
I think they should have had the courage of their convictions and called him the Digimon National Socialist Premier. And he did some super bad shit. We got to see him mistreat his partner Digimon quite a bit over the course of the season.
That was Wormmon, right?
That was Wormmon, yes. Okay. He whipped him.
Oh.
He disregarded his opinions on things, which to me, I mean, you can hurt my body, but don't disregard my opinion. You know?
Let me have some input.
Yeah, let me have some input.
If I got the right kind of input, you can hurt my body all you want.
Correct. But yeah, and we found out in the episode before the last one that when he was finally defeated, he said, okay, fine, you got me. I'm going to go reset the digital world and do a version where I get to come out on top. And they're like, wait a minute, did you think this was like a game, dude? And he's like, what do you mean it's not a game? And they were like, no, these are like living beings.
Oh,
they like
damn.
Exist in this world, and you have just immiserated millions of them for your personal pleasure and enjoyment.
So he thought
many,
that
displaced more.
He thought that the digital world was just a large simulation.
Exactly.
And that his actions had no real consequences.
Exactly. And he thought it just existed in that computer and that he could just reset it. And which I think kind of undercuts the whole thing. I think he should have just been
a monster.
Just a monster for monster's sake.
It would be pretty difficult to redeem him, though, if that were the case.
True.
And this episode is very aggressive in its attempts to rehabilitate this kid, Ken.
Yes, absolutely. At the Ichijoji reference, Mr. and Mrs. Ichijoji are outside Ken's room, seeing that he is still sleeping. In bed, Ken feels like he has lost his heart, the synopsis says.
His whole heart.
Numerous memories of his past. His corazón, his Kokoro, come to mind as he sleeps. The first one is of his brother, Osamu, first teaching him how to blow bubbles and admiring him for being such a genius.
Yeah, now this is a real, like, load-bearing memory. It's really trying to save the cat for this kid and be like, well, he can't be all that bad because he loved his brother. Mm-hmm. And also, his brother was such an inspiration to him. Because he taught him how to blow bubbles?
How to blow bubbles.
I don't know. I feel like there could have been other stronger ways of doing this.
I think even like teaching him how to ride a bike or something.
Yeah.
Because like the bubbles just feel weird. But then again, they do get to have the line where it's like you blow them with such kindness.
That's true.
You blow kind bubbles, Ken.
It's like blowing bubbles is not something that is really a learned skill.
Right.
Like you just kind of do it.
Yeah.
It's not like whistling. You don't like,
right.
You, don't
you
need
do
to
it
practice.
Hard and it doesn't work.
Right.
And you go, wait a minute.
Yeah. You got to blow a little softer.
A little softer.
Go, oh shit.
Although I will say that the kindness thing, hits better having actually seen the episodes leading up to this because
right.
So we see him being fucking evil and then he finally gets his comeuppance and we find out as his partner is dying that he was supposed to have the crest of kindness. His superpower was supposed to be empathy and connection with others.
This was Ken. Ken was supposed to have this crest.
Yep. And okay. it's like a cruel irony because he's done nothing. He's done the exact opposite this entire time.
Yeah. I suppose I should mention at this point, each digidestined child has a quality that is embodied by their crest.
Ah.
So like the previous leaders and actually the current leader are in possession of the crest of courage.
Can I ask a couple lore questions here?
Sure.
Okay, cool. Just because, I mean, I'm sure everybody
else
listening.
What if I said no?
That'd be really funny. That would be really, really funny. And maybe you should.
Just say, because shut the fuck up
because
and then do more synopsis.
I imagine a lot of people. Oh, probably almost everyone, if not everyone listening to this, is totally like, well, what the fuck is this 101 question? Get the fuck out of here, you knew.
You'd think. We got a few people that like that are their only experience of Digimon is listening to this program.
So my question is, these crests, what is their actual like mechanical functionality? How do you receive them? How do you unlock their power? What does that look like?
That's an excellent
question. This is all
question.
Very well established, thankfully. We got solid answers for this. You find them in the ground.
Okay.
Typically.
You just, like dig it up?
You walk by and then like a wall shines and then turns into the crest and floats over to you.
Okay.
And you have to like showcase your like empowered attribute in order to activate the crest and find it in the first place. And then once you've done that and you have it, you can digivolve to an even bigger, more powerful mode than usual.
Yeah. Like you can subject your Digimon to this advanced
digivolution.
Digivolution.
Precisely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like Daisuke, our main guy, would be like super courageous in front of something, and his Vmon would go up to ultimate as a result.
Got it. So it's basically just a reward for exhibiting behavior that is virtuous.
Yep.
Yes. Examples of crests include kindness, love, friendship, knowledge. My favorite, reliability.
I would never get that one.
No. Yeah. No fucking world where I get the crest of reliability.
No, Audrey had to wake my ass up for this. Even then, I was like, how dare you?
Yeah, you were big grumpus for a hot minute.
I was having a cool dream. There were boobs, okay?
When I get woken up from a cool dream.
Yeah. I hate it when I dream that I have a bunch of money and I wake up and I go, oh, right,
that
I don't have
that
a bunch
one
of
sucks.
Money.
Like, I bought a boat in a dream and was like, hell yeah, I got a boat. And I was like, damn it.
Damn, a boat is incredibly extravagant. I just like, oh, I have grocery money for the month. That's my dream. That's my fantasy.
In Trump's America? Come on.
In these unprecedented times?
Eggs costing this much and yet with fucking egg selling companies having record profits?
Get their asses.
Yeah, this is welcome to the best corner of the show, which is just where Corla has to bleep herself in the edit, where I say everyone who owns an egg company, all of them.
I exported a sine wave like for this purpose. She gets to use that.
We get spicy.
So Ken then recounts walking with his mother, seeing the neighbors tell her about how Osamu is such a good boy and having so many abilities. In like a nightmarish, like mirror world where like many multicolored moms, but it's the same mom over and over again, doing Ojo laugh pose.
I was a little confused about this mother. I would say she was roughly the size of an average human mother, but her coloration was different from the average human mother. Was she a specific character who we should have known?
No. She's just like,
this is just generic, like friend of his mom.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah. But what we learn through this is that Ken's mother was full of nothing but praise for Osamu, his big brother, because Osamu was such a smart child
and gifted,
effective, would just go out and do so many things that would then cause his mom to be praised for the actions of that son, whereas Ken was excluded from the conversation entirely.
Up until we find out Osamu's death, where they push Ken to do the same. And something that you should know about Ken Ichijoji, he's a soccer star. He's a incredible academic, just well-loved by his peers, but a monster even to like there. Wasn't there like a cat that came up to him in an episode and he like kicked the cat?
Mm-hmm.
A real cat? Not even a digital one?
An actual human cat.
A human cat? An actual honest to goodness cat girl?
Yeah.
Kicked her right in the stomach. Oh, I know so many women who would hear that and be like, yeah?
Kick me in my stomach.
Well, again, it's all about establishing consent, boundaries, and guidelines up front. Yeah.
You gotta have your want will want list.
Right.
Kick me in the stomach is on my want list.
That's not on my want list.
I do want to do a deeper dive on this because this bit is actually pretty thick with cultural
Yeah, because the mom, like the mom that is depicted, I feel like is a type.
Yeah, this is supposed to be representative of kind of a universal pressure in Japanese society for children that the office work caste-based culture is replicating itself in the school system and in the home well before these kids are ever supposed to be employed. They are being pushed and pressured to be like the perfect employee and excel academically in a way that kind of fits all of these, you know, circular kids into the square hole.
These kids are so fucking circular.
They're round. They're just round little guys. just like the Digimon. But for real, there's this element of just pressure that's not even necessarily like thought about by or acknowledged by anyone here. But which is ever present both in Osamu's treatment, which we see he was not very happy with. His parents are like, oh, maybe it sucked that we pushed him to be that way, actually. And Ken also like took on that burden once his brother died. The look of the Digimon Kaiser we see in his brother standing over him at the desk when he goes to hit him.
They do that shot of Osamu standing over Ken is replicated like at least a dozen times with Ken standing over Wormmon.
Okay, so the idea here is that Ken, once he gets into the digital world, is sort of acting out all of this trauma that he has inherited.
Yes.
So all of these,
and following his brother's example.
Sure. So all of these unfair pressures that have been placed upon him in sort of that structure and that structural violence, he then, as a release, is taking that and meeting it out against Wormmon, for instance.
Precisely.
Okay.
But that we also see that that's not initially how he treats the little guy. It's before his brother dies, he like they're on an adventure. They're in the desert. They love each other. And then as soon as he is put in that male primogeniture fucking like heir position basically with his brother's death, all of that pressure comes crashing down on him and just makes him into a terrible person, despite excelling at everything that Japanese like school culture wants him to do.
Well, and I feel like too, the way that his mom is presented is that she isn't just sort of molding herself into the constraints of this society. She's also, personally speaking, a bit of a narcissist. Like, it's not so much that Osamu's behavior is something that is admirable because of what he has been doing, and like, aren't you a good boy? It's more because Osamu is going out and getting all of these great reviews and high marks, it then comes back to his mom, and his mom receives all of the praise by virtue of how good her little boy is.
Yes.
So she has not only lost sight of the importance of, you know, tending to your family just on a very practical level, she's also lost sight of the things that make her younger son matter. You know, the things that are uniquely good about him.
Yeah, the things that make him an individual person,
right,
all his own, as opposed to just an A plus at filling the role she needs,
right,
him to. This is the kind of mother who would have Munchausen by proxy if both of her children just kind of sucked at school. She would be like, all right, I can give you a little bit of arsenic every day, so at least I can be a good parent. You know, people will praise me for taking care of my sick child.
Yeah.
Jesus. Then at home, her mother tells Osamu the exact same thing that they told her. So tells the kid, wow, everybody said I was such a good mom because,
right,
of how good you are at school. Ken begins to feel
jealous. She says, I keep getting praise because of you.
Which is, I think, honestly, kind of... there were a few points of this. Okay, I'm just going to throw my cards on the table because I did not do so earlier. I haven't really ever watched Digimon. Other than like when I was a really young kid, I watched a few episodes of it.
Okay.
I think in the first season, I want to say, back when it was on Fox or whatever.
Right.
And I was surprised at how nuanced some of this writing was.
Absolutely.
For a kid's show.
Yeah.
Particularly in this second season, and particularly in the subtitled version that we're watching. And this is what I keep saying. I keep saying that Digimon has stakes and Digimon has emotional depth that Pokemon simply does not rise to.
And it has things to say about the culture in which it was created that I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, Pokemon definitely does do a lot of that in the early seasons, in particular the fucking seaside resort episode where a fucking Tentacruel labor union strike happens. Where they're like, all right, Cthulhu is going to go on strike and you're going to give them fucking wages and benefits.
But I feel like even that is something that you can adapt and localize pretty easily. Whereas I feel like a lot of this more cultural stuff is very difficult to localize, actually. This
Absolutely.
Is very specifically Japanese.
This is something that like you have to bring in some understanding in order to unravel all of what's like informing what's on screen here. Which is why I'm here, because I'm a fucking dweeb ass.
Ken begins to feel jealous and ignored and gets the idea that he'd never be noticed as long as Osamu was around, and wishes for him to disappear.
Yeah.
Then one evening,
again, the systemic violence replicating itself in its otherwise innocent actors is like, Ken doesn't necessarily see that Osamu's position sucks, actually.
Yeah.
He just sees that he's not getting any of the praise, any of the like care and attention from his parents. All he sees is what he lacks, and so he lashes out at the person who's in the position to receive what he can't.
Then one evening, Ken and Sam, or Osamu, I'm reading the they did the dub in the
Chopped off the first and last vowel.
Osamu and Ken discover a digivice that came out of their computer. Ken thought it originally belonged to Osamu, who tries to figure out its functions. Then Osamu puts it in his desk drawer, ordering Ken not to touch it no matter what.
No touchy.
But Ken, unable to resist, slowly opens the drawer and touches the digivice, which immediately activates,
he gets
drawing
sucked.
Him into the digital world.
He
for
just
the first
straight
time.
Up gets sucked immediately.
Full
right
sucked.
Into the computer.
He went surfing on the internet and got sucked to cyberspace.
Okay. Hell yeah.
That's it. God, my brain's working.
Is that from a Carmen Sandiego product?
No, that's from Freakazoid. There we go.
Okay.
The fucking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man,
check out Dexter Douglas, nerd computer ace. I'm just going to do the whole song now.
Now keep going.
How dare you question me?
At this point.
Went surfing on the internet, got sucked to cyberspace.
Let's go.
Turned into the Freakazoid. He's strong and super fast.
Don't trail off.
Is that it?
Super, super quick. I fucked up. That's
There's
why I trailed off.
Strong
and super quick. He drives the villains crazy because he's a lunatic.
So true.
What if Bugs Bunny was also a dweeb?
Yeah. That
but
was
also,
clearly written by a dweeb. You know what I mean? Some dweeb wrote that. Shortly thereafter, Osamu is hit by an oncoming car and dies, leaving him devastated and guilt-ridden as he felt his own wish to kill him.
Rip bozo, try harder next time. Skill issue, you should have parried the car.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a QTE. You gotta hit the X button as hard as fast as you can.
Mash X.
Asura's yeah. wrath. You just gotta pick up the semi and fucking suplex it.
Sometime later, the young Ken plays on Osamu's computer and finds an email addressed to him from a mysterious person. Scared, yet wanting to read it, he learns that the pressure to succeed in the real world would be unbearable, as he would be expected to fulfill the dreams that Osamu no longer could. Takes the mysterious person's advice to travel to the digital world instead, where he would answer to no one. Now, this is something that is not fully elucidated. I think there's a lot more to learn here.
Yes.
We don't know who sent the email. We do know that he went to the alternate digital world where Kari went when she met Dagomon. And she
was called by an evil force there.
Yes.
Like, it was definitely whatever called her there was not a good thing.
Right.
So we can presume the email is from a similarly evil force.
Yeah. As I recall, she was in a deep melancholy at the time and was pulled into the digital world. Ken, following the death of his brother, also very likely in like a similar emotional state.
So just to clarify timeline here, mm-hmm. when we see Ken go into the computer after getting the emails and everything, right? Is that his origin story that leads up to the events of those previous episodes that you were talking about? Or is this now a jump in time back forward to the... I was a little confused about the timeline.
It might be that he spent some time adventuring in the digital world because we see him as a much younger child.
Right.
When they get jumped by that Gazimon and Wormmon defends him, he was a much younger kid than when he went to the dark digital world.
Right, okay.
So to clarify, we have start of timeline, Ken gets his Digivice.
Right.
He and his brother go on a Digi-adventure. His brother dies. He gets the email. He goes on an evil adventure and becomes the Kaiser.
Yes, okay. That's when he becomes Digimon Hitler. And then there is no return until he wakes back up from his coma, which happens in this episode, right?
His grief coma from watching his worm friend die in his arms.
Got it. Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I like being helpful.
He takes the mysterious person's advice to travel to the digital world instead, where he would answer to no one.
The mysterious person who knows precisely where his Digivice is.
Yeah,
which has a real 24-hour photo feeling to it to me. I've cased your house. I've seen
the
every inch.
Snapshot
of it.
Was originally a hunting term. He uses the Digivice once again. This time, it takes him to the Dark Ocean for the first time, which must be what they call it in the dub.
The Doshin.
He steps into the water and puts the Digivice in, transforming it into a black D3, and replacing his kind personality with one of selfishness and hatred. And he becomes the Digimon Emperor, which is the Digivice that he was shown to have later on.
So it was the effect of the Digivice itself that made him evil and turned him into Digimon Hitler?
It could be. I think it's this first trip to the Dark Ocean.
Sure.
That really put the evil in him. But I think he had the seed already from his brother's death.
Oh, interesting. Interesting word there, actually. That's going to come up. Seeds of darkness.
Ooh.
I was going to say, this may be a little bit of a reach, but given the kind of Evangelion-ness of this episode, I'm not sure. The fact that he baptizes his Digivice in dark waters and it becomes a corrupted, twisted version of itself lends itself to a little bit of like a negative Christian reading.
I think you're onto something.
That's Ripper.
Fucking A. Yeah. Is John the Baptist, if he was an evil
John, because
if he was Cthulhu.
Digimon, one thing I do know about it, despite having not watched a great deal of it, is that there is Christian imagery throughout.
Yeah. Digimon gets fucking crucified.
Yep. Crucifixion, Easter, resurrecting from a cave.
Yeah. Back in the present, Ken's parents look on at a still sleeping Ken and discuss what happened to him since Osamu's death and discover they may have ignored Osamu's desire to be a normal kid as well as Ken's and his own well-being.
Now, they do respond to this in a very individualistic way. They don't stop to think about the systemic pressures that led to them being shitty parents. They're just kind of like, oh, we fucked up.
Yeah.
We fucked up really hard. We almost lost both our kids, and we still might, maybe. He is in a coma.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. Ken continues to reminisce about the time he blew bubbles thanks to Sam's guidance.
So important you know about the bubbles. He was kind.
Yeah.
Kind bubbles.
Osamu explained to Ken that the bubbles he blows come out perfectly because his technique is gentle. While his own bubbles don't come out at all, Ken encourages him to try anyway, and when he does, the image of Osamu appears.
Wait.
Ken finally wakes up, much to his parents' relief, but doesn't recognize them because he hasn't found his heart yet.
Oh, that's what's happening. That, okay.
Yeah.
This is a bit of an odd moment. He's kind of just lost in his... It's not... He even says in his head, it's not that he doesn't recognize them or he's just... He's just like, why? Why would you give me the time of day after all of this shit? Like, I don't deserve it. I don't understand it.
His parents apologize for trying to make him like Osamu without realizing it, but Ken can't forgive them because he doesn't understand what they did. His mother tearfully begs him to just be himself. Ken sheds a few tears himself and believes his heart is close. He then looks out the window as his mother tells him that dinner is ready, and he looks at a picture of Osamu. Soon after,
I have a question here for both of you, because obviously this is a trans femme reading of Digimon.
Yeah.
In my opinion, when you see Ken here, after sort of coming back to the, you know, world of the living, emerging from his coma, that's a very feminine looking boy. And that's curious what your read is on this. If you think this is meaningful, significant, if it's trying to say something about femininity or anything along those lines, because when I saw it, I was like, this young child is on his way to becoming a her. But I don't know if that's something that actually happened in the show. It was just like a gut, like, boy, that looks like a girl now kind of thing.
You could make that reading. There's several elements that lend themselves to that reading of Ken here.
Like original sin,
for
perhaps,
one, like, or, we saw his brother looming. That's what the Kaiser looks like. He has been, ever since his brother died, he has been performing a very toxic form of masculinity. Mm, toxic to the point of murder. But, he's been putting on a facade of trying to be his brother, trying to fill that role. And it's only after that is like forcibly taken away from him, that he's able to start discovering himself proper. We also have the fact that his crest is kindness. And while, I don't want to do gender essentialism, be like kindness is inherently feminine, at least for the purpose of this reading, it does feel like tapping into his kindness, like coincides with him having a much softer feminine appearance, speaking much softer,
I wonder if
taking
maybe
on
it
a
has
like
to...
taking on a caretaking role, as we see with his reincarnated partner in a little bit. He has a literal baby child to take care of now.
Yeah.
The voice actor is a woman, right? For Ken?
I don't know. Let us find out. Corla, bring up that clip.
Bring up that clip. Which clip?
The one where we find out what the gender of Ken Ichijoji's voice actor is.
Roll that beautiful Ken footage.
I was going to say, while you're looking that up, I was thinking that maybe it was a play towards youthfulness.
Mm.
That, like, femininity typically, like, feminine... characters tend to read younger. I wonder if maybe it was an attempt to kind of pull youth into that.
I guess, but I feel like what we see of Ken pre the coma in flashback form, it is much more specifically the appearance of what I would consider a boy, like traditionally speaking.
Sure. I think it's about the fucking straight, like flat iron fucking hair. You know what
I
mean? Like,
definitely.
The hair is very...
And the whip.
Swoop.
The whip helps. But yeah, actually, the Japanese VA for Ken is Romy Park, the gal who voiced Edward Elric in the original Fullmetal Alchemist.
Wow. Oh, okay.
That's cool.
Good read.
Yeah. That's I did not catch that.
Yeah. I wonder if maybe there's something to that. That's very interesting.
Primarily voices lady characters, so again, kind of lends itself to the trans feminine read.
That's cool. That's hella cool.
It is neat.
Soon after, Ken is on his computer and recognizes his Digivice in the Crest of Kindness and figures out that his heart is somewhere in the digital world.
Oh, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, got it.
he goes there just before his mother discovers
him
gone again.
To me, no, to say the least.
I mean, yeah, there's, if the whole inciting incident of your life up to this point is the death of your brother and traveling through the digital world, your brother's not coming back, but the digital world's still there.
Right.
So yeah. Maybe
Hormon crucially does not die forever.
Right. Figures out that his heart is somewhere in the digital world. He goes there just before his mother discovers him gone again.
Up until this point where he came back fully in a coma, he had disappeared from the real world for several months. Just without telling it. Well, he did leave a note that was just like, I'm leaving, goodbye.
Yeah.
But yeah, his parents were just kind of left to assume that, oh, we've lost both our children now.
Yeah. It's sad as fuck. He's like, you know what? I'm going full time with this evil emperor shit, and stops going to school and just disappears into the digital world.
He went full Hikikomori.
Christ! Hikikomori!
Yes. Ken goes in search of Wormmon and ends up in Primary Village. It's as so often characters do, they end up places in this show. Apoyomon explains to him that Digimon get reconfigured instead of actually dying. This excites Ken at first, but he sees so many digi eggs that he can't remember which one belongs to Wormmon.
Not to mention he's being lambasted by the reincarnated the babies the of people.
He is getting chewed the fuck out.
They're so mad. Ayurimon recognizes Ken as the Digimon Emperor and tries to attack him, but he shields his face with his right arm. Very specific synopsis, goddamn.
Yeah.
He then realizes that he had been a monster, killing and making slaves of innocent creatures.
This just sort of comes to him, like, as a sudden epiphany.
Oh, shit. That was bad.
I Hitlered out really hard there, didn't I? Oh, my God.
Dang it. Gosh,
I think
darn.
I would have liked a little bit more of a process of discovery here. But,
We do get a little bit of that in the episode where he's actually taken down. The man crumples in the desert as he realizes the depths of everything he's done.
Fully breaks. I think it would be super cool if one of the baby Digimon was like, you killed me.
Yeah.
Like, if they made that explicit.
I remember.
Like,
I'm a little baby. I'm going to tell you how I died at your hands.
Do you remember the city full of Mechanorimon? I was one of those Mechanorimon that you killed. Like, I think that would be crazy. A Punimon and a Bottomon chastise him for all the horrible things he did as the Digimon Emperor. Ken looks at his hands and tearfully cries out in sorrow to Osamu and Wormmon. Forcing himself, he is able to remember the first time he went to the digital world and met Wormmon. So here we get the flashback. Wormmon
where
saves
Gazimon,
Ken
like pops out of the sand as if
like
he'd been waiting there the whole
spider.
Time.
It's fucking weird.
Exactly. He's like an antlion.
He tells Ken not to worry, Wormmon, when he is slightly injured. He says he is glad that he has such a kind person like Ken for a partner.
Oh, damn. Talk about dramatic irony. Yeah. This guy has no idea what's about to happen to him.
For a fucking full half a season. Ugh. Fucking 20 episodes of getting the shit kicked out of him. Realizing he forgot and broke his promise to Wormmon, he vows to only use what he has learned to become stronger. English version. He also promises to be the kind and gentle person that Wormmon once knew. The Crest of Kindness reacts, and he finds Wormmon's digi-egg, which hatches
glowing
into the baby form, Leafmon. It's called Leafmon.
Very cute little design, by the way,
yeah,
Leafmon, with the little pacifier and everything.
I love it. Both happily and tearfully reunite. Oh, how good is that? Back in Ken's apartment, his parents are worried that he might not come back this time, but Ken emerges from his room, much to their relief. Ken, finally understanding why his mother was crying in the first place, calls her Mama for the first time in a long time.
I like that his dad is like, how do you keep doing this?
Where are you going?
We don't have a crawl space.
There's like,
we have
the window,
a line of sight to every
how
road
do,
out of here. What
how do
you
get
how?
Back in without us seeing? It's fucking weird. All cry happily and embrace as Leafmon watches from a distance. Cucked emotionally. End of synopsis. So now's the part of the show where you rate this scale on a this episode, rather, on a scale of rookie to mega. That's the four basic levels of Digivolution. There's rookie, Champion, Ultimate, and Mega. What are you giving this one, Corley?
Oh, man. It's tough. Because this one's such a weird episode. It is mm-hmm. incredibly different to the rest of the show. And normally, I enjoy an episode that does its own weird fucking thing. But this feels a little incomplete. This feels like the first of a two-parter where we get to see.
I sincerely hope it is not the first of a two-parter.
But either way, it's good stuff. It hits pretty fucking hard. Haven't seen the rest of the show up to this point. I'm sorry. One day we will get a guest on for an episode that makes fucking sense.
Yeah, we had fucking Very Tall Bart on the end of Agumon getting captured. Sweet. It was so fucking. It's like we had to explain a bunch of emotional beats to him too. It was nuts.
There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with explaining.
Gigi
emotional
came
beats.
On for the peepee one.
Yeah, that was after we watched the episode. And I went, "Oh, this is for Gigi."
Yeah, we watched it again. Whether it was fucking funny.
My thought is, so what are the second and third categories again? Sorry.
Champion and Ultimate.
So I'm putting it between Champion and Ultimate, I think.
Okay, Armor Digivolution.
So an armor.
Yeah, because, you know, Ultimate, I think that in terms of what it was attempting to do, it was shooting pretty high, right?
Yes.
But the devil's in the details when it comes to execution of stuff like this. And I think it was attempting to tie maybe a few too many things together. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there was a great deal of, there had to be a lot of flashbacks to a lot of different things to sort of provide load-bearing emotion.
Being so fucked up.
Yeah. And admittedly, I imagine that if I'd seen some of those episodes, I would be a bit more emotionally engaged. But I also think that when you're writing something like this, it does need to stand on its own. And it just doesn't.
Yeah, it was a once a week serialized Saturday morning cartoon.
Right.
You kind of have to assume that each episode is someone's first episode.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, just to compare it to something that we talked about on our show last year, Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Nothing ever happens in that show. But what's so fun about it is that, you know, at the beginning and the end, you're going to get really explicit exposition about every single thing that's going on. They're always going to tell you every single thing that's going on. And I'm not saying that's necessarily the best approach for writing. It's pretty on the nose. It's pretty didactic. But that's what makes it work. And I have to imagine there could be a version of this episode that contained enough of that external context that would make it work better. That's my thought. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it does. No, absolutely.
That's what I was trying to drive at with the feeling of incompleteness.
Yeah.
That this is not delivering precisely on what it wanted to, even if it was shooting very high. I think I'm going to agree with you on that. I'm going to give it an armor.
But I do where it establishes us at the end. We have a very clear sense of where things are heading, and that, I think, is to the credit of the writing. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there,
Audrey. Please. I'm a sucker for shit like this. I love the fucking dripping pathos. I love the way it recontextualizes everything that this shitty dude has done. Maybe not perfectly, but I think it rises to a mega. I'm going to say it's a mega because I'm a sucker for this shit. You said that, Corley, you said that you like when an episode does different shit like this.
Yeah, this one's another lane episode.
Yeah, my very favorite episodes of this show are when it does something completely fucking different. Like when Izzy got sucked into the brain dimension with Vadamon.
Yeah.
That was fucking cool. When Ty went back to the real world for the first time and the animation was completely different. I think that this does enough different shit that I am here for it. And I'm a total sucker for the mostly unearned, I'll say, pathos.
You know what? I wouldn't even say it's necessarily unearned, because one thing that they do get right that I really appreciate is that they do not try to, they're definitely going poor Ken, but they're also saying, hey, you did some shit.
Yeah.
hey, you have to answer for all of the fucking genocide you did.
Yeah, when all those babies and the eggs chew him out. Like, yeah. that's there for a specific reason.
You killed many of us. Many of us are here because of you.
I would have liked to have seen, like, scenes of the war. Because there's, like, there are scenes where they, like, somebody clearly, like, worked on Gundam or something. Because there's, like, Erdramon, like, strafing a fucking city and shit. And some really cool dogfight imagery. I wish we had seen some more of that.
I think some of that would have been helpful context for me coming into this cold, just to really know what the actual things were that happened, as opposed to simply these things were bad. They were bad, which I think you do also need. I think that you need him to sort of face up to the consequences of his actions by speaking with the victims, you know? But without the additional context of what actually happened, it's very difficult to understand what those things were.
Right. You just kind of have babies yelling at a child.
Which is funny. I want to be very clear. That's really funny.
You killed me. I died a brutal death. There was no honor or love.
All right, let's do this one now.
Pussy two.
Oh, shit. It's pornography time. Time for pornography. I forget why, but we decided on Game Grumps as our porn theme.
I cannot wait to see what we get. This is going to be great.
Holy shit.
Who's describing the first one?
You know what, Audrey? Why don't you take this first one?
Okay, let me show you how
I provided the link here.
Oh my fucking god.
The look on your face the moment it loaded up.
That's cool. That's fucking cool.
Jesus Christ. All right. We have Trans Mask Woody the Woodpecker. Oh, no, sorry. Yeah. This is Winnie Woodpeckers. This is actually just like
I see.
Right.
Cartoon
cis
lady.
Femme. It's Woody Woodpecker with a pussy is exactly what the fuck it is. Who is saying to, like, rendered in the style of the splash screen at the beginning of the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
That's basically just Aaron's face from the thing.
Yeah, hey, I'm grump, I'm not so grump.
There is Jontron. Jafari is his last name, do I have that correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
There's John Jafari, there's Aaron Hansen. Fucking Winnie Woodpecker says, do I have a dripping ass pussy? And Aaron says, yes, I can smell it from here, while Jontron laughs.
Common question. Common answer. This all makes sense to me.
This tracks.
The worst part is I know exactly what bit this is referencing.
And no.
It's extra funny to me because of it, but also it's still horrifying.
This was a lot for me to just jump in on. That was crazy.
I found one. If you would like, I can share.
Oh, please.
Corla, would you please describe this one?
All right, here we go.
Beep, beep. Oh. This is I'm on the other side of this. I finally know what this feels like. Thank you for letting me experience empathy. Uh-huh. So this is Yuka and Laylee worshiping Jontron Jafari's balls and dick.
Yeah.
Yuka is getting just slammed, just picked up and used like a cum-filled rag doll.
Like a fleshlight.
Yeah. Like a fleshlight, yes. Jontron has stars in his eyes and is saying, "Ech."
Yep.
His classic catchphrase.
Woo!
There's cum. There's so much cum.
There's so much cum.
Yuka is like having it forcibly ejected in a projectile stream.
Right.
The character, the little purple bat, is named Lele.
Well, Lele's licking the balls. That's the other thing.
And does Lele not look happy about it.
Unhappy.
Looks very much like I would rather not be here. Fuck.
Yeah.
Also, John has like weird proportions, and that his arms get very, very thin towards the hand, towards the wrist.
I think legs are just crazy long. Fuck. This is bleak.
It's really
this
bad.
Is bleak.
Woo!
It's really
bad.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Let's get. You know what,
Josh?
Get on the train.
Oh, I gotta describe one now.
Oh
right.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
You don't have to.
Oh, no, 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 I will. All right, so we've got... Well, is this actually the Game Grumps here? What's going on?
Okay, so this is the what custom is character from the Game Grumps playthrough of Sonic Forces.
Ah,
the
game where you
get to make an OC.
They just
made a green cat with a 1,000-yard stare and tits.
And tits, yeah. So, yeah, she's sort of looking off into the distance,
in
right?
The
with these
distance.
Big red eyes.
Let's be clear about which distance.
No, she is re-experiencing her memories of Vietnam.
Yeah,
as she licks penis.
And then she's licking what I can... There's a cock with like a vein on the side of it, a big bulging vein.
Yeah, a little hot dog mustard vein.
And then on top, it seems to be drizzled with something, which might just be the thing's saliva.
Yeah.
But it sort of looks like the way that you would spread a condiment such as mustard on a hot dog. The tip is engorged, and I would say that this is a circumcised penis.
Yes.
It appears to be an uncircumcised penis. My apologies. Because you can see the way that the foreskin is sort of folded back. The penis is attached to legs and a torso. The torso is wearing a red shirt. And then the green cat thing is saying, "I really love your cock, mister." And then in response, the Game Grump, I guess, who is receiving the licking of the penis, says, "Is that what that emotion is?" And then there's a couple of little, like, I guess it's like squirt marks, so as to sort of give you a sense that when he's saying it in an aroused fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and a little heart after "I really love your cock."
That's right.
Yeah.
So I tried to be as
thorough
as possible, as clinical as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I would not want anybody to get aroused by this description. And
it's
I hope
like how we do on RFTB. We'll talk about like sucking and fucking, but like we're not, you know, it's not about being horny.
Yeah, if anybody was turned on by this, seek help. Either my description or like if you're looking at the original image itself and it does something for you.
They
not good,
linked,
folks.
They
not
are
good.
Linked on the episode description. So.
Yep. I do want to tell y'all, first of all, the red shirt would heavily imply that the person getting their dick licked is Dan Avidan.
Okay.
So this is good old, this is Danny
sure.
getting that schlong schlock. And the character's name is Plurp Dankenstein McFlirtin the Cat Esquire.
Got it.
Okay. Good.
How did I do, by the way? Like, this is one where
excellent.
I really need, like, the best student part of me demands to be, like, ranked relative to my peers in this exercise.
You approach this with a zeal that is rarely seen, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Audrey is often recoiling as she is forced to describe
typically,
these.
Typically, I'm like,
I mean, to be very clear, I was also recoiling, but that did not, like, I still had to do my duty. You know what I mean?
So, yeah,
like,
you're on the alien spacecraft, you're seeing the egg, and you have to get closer to it so that the facehugger can
I'm the first one who's going to get his face eaten by the facehugger. That's absolutely true.
Yeah. Okay. Is there, Lord, tell me there's no more.
No.
Okay.
No, that was a really good one to end off on, actually.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So now we're going to do this one. We're going to name our digital champion.
I got to give it immediately to the bottom on who just fucking spit in Ken's face.
Yeah.
That was, first of all, hilarious that a baby is like, "You killed me!"
Yeah.
But also just very deserved, very cathartic, having watched Ken throughout the rest of this show. He deserves a little bit of vitriol going his way at this point.
Absolutely.
Not having the context for everything else, I think I am going to have to give it to Ken. You know, it's hard to face up to your past, but it does feel, to me at least, that he is now on a journey of, you know, it's hard to find penance for what it is that you've done, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make it right to others? And I just hope that through this, Ken is able to do so. Based on this episode, I feel like he's on the right track.
Hell yeah. I'm going to give it to Leafmon.
Hey, little baby.
For just glowing so right when the time is right. For just lighting it up for Ken and guiding him back home, you know?
True, true.
It's good.
Found his heart.
Good stuff. Found his heart.
you need the good cop and you need the bad cop. In this case, Leafmon was the good cop.
Absolutely.
A cab includes Leafmon.
So that's it. That's what we do on this one. Josh, would you tell the people where they can find your stuff?
Sure. Well, look, I co-host a podcast called The Worst of All Possible Worlds. We every week do a different case study in the pop culture of a dying empire. We cover everything from video games to TV to musical theater to children's Christian radio drama. yeah, it's every week. Every other week we do an episode that is just exclusive to our Patreon. And we have also had both of the hosts of this show on our show.
Yeah.
So, one of the hosts multiple times. So that's very exciting. Would recommend going and checking us out wherever you get your podcasts. We also have a website, worstpossible.world. And if you'd like to know what I'm up to, you can find me on Blue Sky at bosch.worstpossible.world or my website, which is joshborman.com. And I actually just did a little bit of refurbishing of my website today. So go check it out. It looks pretty good, I think.
Fucking A. I do a little podcast called Radio Free Tote Bag. It's a show about relationships where we do the dumbest jokes you've ever heard in your life, as well as genuine, heartfelt, emotionally resonant advice for your romantic needs. If you got something going on, you write into the show. We tell you how to fix it, and then hopefully we help you out. So if you are a little lovelorn, go check out Radio Free Tote Bag anywhere you find your podcast or our website, rftb.me. And I don't plug this enough. I'm at Aud on Blue Sky, at AUD on Blue Sky. Go check me out.
AUD.bsky.social.
That is correct.
Yay.
I've got one other show going on. It's called Post Ponies. It's a My Little Pony Friendship is Magic retrospective that also touches on the rise of American fascism. It's just me and three other deranged trans women. It's a grand old time, and you can find it anywhere else that you're listening to podcasts, as well as the best site in the entire game, smallgayhorse.com.
Ooh, nice.
Such a good URL.
It's so good. And if I may, go listen to the Worst of All Possible Worlds where Audrey and I are on it.
Do but it.
Also, I have to recommend the episode of Wit's Endless Summer, where we find out that Wit gets incredibly angry over board games.
Oh yes, I forgot about that one.
Where we find out he has a real dark side, and that dark side is a competitive nature.
Oh my god. And that's one of the newer ones too. That's one of the ones where Wit, the patriarch of Adventures in Odyssey, is on his third and current actor, who's probably also going to die soon. And then we have to find out if there's going to be a Wit 4 or not. Look, whatever happens, we'll be covering it on The Worst of All Possible Worlds. I can tell you that much.
It's good stuff.
Yes, please check out Worst of All Possible Worlds. Incredible podcast. Very incisive. Very entertaining.
What were? Oh God, we did Barkley Shut Up and Jam. Yeah. I forgot.
Yes, we fucking did.
I locked that shit in the vault.
It was a grand old time. Josh, thank you so much for joining us. It's been
a true delight having you.
It's been a blast.
Thank you also to the listener. And thank you special much. We're going to remember to fucking do it this time to our patrons.
Hell yeah.
On Patreon. I have to log into my other fucking Google account to get into this one. I'll just pull up a screenshot real quick. Do we have, hold up. Is that a new? No, I'm kidding. Let me zoom out and then grab this.
You got this, Audrey. You can do it.
I'm working on it. It's going to come. And I'm going to send this to you on Discord, Corla. And you can edit around this. I have faith in you.
I could edit around it, or I could slice us up and make some kind of YouTube poop section.
That could be fun.
Or I could just do my type 5.
Hey.
I don't have a type 5.
Okay. Dang.
Okay. Corla, who are we shouting out first?
We are shouting out Asa Linson.
Nobody Newt.
Saturday's Claire.
This penguin is food motivated and jumps onto the counter. Parenthesis cat.
Huh.
Jubilation Lee.
Pablo Hummus.
Mish.
Waylon the Sprite Smith.
Maya.
Teresa.
Bubba Nitro.
And the host of Post Ponies and my metamore, Gigi.
Nice.
Gigi.
Wait, sorry. Can you refresh that Patreon list real quick?
Hold on. The worst of all possible.
Oh, shit.
Hell yeah.
Twapwa.
Twapwa. We got the twapwa bump. That fucking rocks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hella. That's two of my podcasts you're fucking supporting now. That's cool as
I almost said live on air as if we actually shoot this in front of a live audience. It's live to tape. Yeah, there is a live audience. Lilith is back there.
That's right.
Just enjoying it to hear your part of it.
It's live to tape. You're not editing this?
I guess we do edit it.
So I can get my thoughts about Dagomon out on record.
Yeah. No.
Where's Mechmon? Okay. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, patrons. And thank you, Josh, for joining us. It's been a real blast. And, you know, this week you're going to get out there and you're going to buy the products.